This episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress, from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's fenwick.com. Hello and welcome to the Inside Transportation Podcast, production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm the writer of the Inside Transportation and Inside Electric Vehicles newsletters, and I am joined here by my co-host, angel investor, podcaster, and the only man who is available for both delivery and curbside pickup, Jason Calcanis. How's it going?
I am here. Yes, delivery and curbside pickup of my brisket. It's 14 hours on the Traeger grill, the Traeger grill is like one of those smart smokers I've been using with the pellets, and it's okay. I have a list of product suggestions. I give it like a B. It's not an A yet as a product. It's kind of like, it's not a Tesla. It's more like a Prius, I guess. No, it's not as good as a Prius.
And you're going to drop those affiliate links in the show notes.
Well, drop those affiliate links. We get $300 per Traeger you buy. No, we're not doing that.
Yeah. It's been a minute since we've spoken.
I know. How are you doing? How's your virus? I know that you were part of the...
I am a part of the vaccine trial. $2,000-$3,000. I did take a...
Which is more than I pay you to write the newsletter, frankly.
So that's like... I know. It's good money. Yeah. But I took an antibody test.
What is this
going
to say
after?
To everybody that, like, you're getting paid more money for the vaccine than the newsletter? Okay, wait. Explain to people who are joining us for the first time on episode 18.
New listeners who may have been coming into the podcast, by the way, from I am participating in this COVID-19 vaccine trial. I got injected last month, and then I proceeded to take an antibody test right after I got the injection just to see if I actually had anything. Mm. And what do you think? Do you think dope or nope? Dope is I have antibodies for COVID and I can live recklessly, or nope? For nope.
I'm going to say nope.
Yeah, I don't have antibodies, sadly. But
so just wait, does that mean you're in the placebo or it didn't work, or one of those two?
Placebo group. Yeah, placebo group.
So it's a coin toss.
I know.
Now wait, who is this with? Who is the which of the
It's the Moderna RNA vaccine. So
got it.
I'm sure for people who are very well-versed in science, they know why this vaccine is actually very significant. It's a lot different than what we've seen in the past with like the flu vaccine and stuff. Because it actually inserts like RNA into your system and it creates like a defense from the vaccine using that. So very interesting stuff. But it's also been very interesting to hear what you've been up to, because you're making waves, Jason.
I am?
Hearing people talk about your interview with Nikola founder Trevor Milton on This Week in Startups. I keep seeing things on Twitter about it. You're kind of like an EV god right now. So why don't you talk to your listeners right now?
I actually haven't seen too much of it, except for there seems to be like, remember Tesla Q was like everybody hated Elon and it was a scam.
Yes, yes.
And then he delivered like a million cars and one car of the decade and car of the century and everything. And then the stock ripped, and now those people, I think, are all, you know, in therapy or in like insane asylums because they don't understand it. But there seems to be a contingent of people who believe that the Nikola company is a fraud.
Yeah, Nikola Q.
Yeah, exactly. Because they went public through a SPAC. Basically, they backdoored their way into public. It's very clear that they are riding on the coattails of Tesla. I think we'd all agree on that. They may not, but I kind of talked to him a little bit about that. But what was the exact feedback that you're seeing about the interview?
people were commending you for your interview skills. They really liked how you were grilling him and giving him some good questions. And I guess people hadn't really been seeing that from any other interviews that were happening with different news publications. So I just keep seeing your name appear on Twitter with people saying, thank you, Jason. Thank you for asking the hard questions. And you can see that interview in the show notes. We'll make sure to put that in there. But
yeah, the Notion show notes I would do. But you know what I would say is about this is I came into it with an open mind, always, because I invest in founders for a living. Now, people told me, you know, like, did you have it in for him? Because some people thought I was trying to make him look foolish. I was not trying to make, and nor do I in any interview, try to make a founder look foolish. What I do is I ask the most basic questions. It's an interview technique where you ask simple questions and you let the other person talk. And he is a talkative person. And so there were moments where I asked like very basic questions, like when he said that he could make hydrogen charging stations for a fraction of the amount of money, like a tenth or something.
Right.
I said, so what did you do to make this 90% cheaper or 10 times cheaper? And, you know, like, I don't think people ask those very basic questions to him. And what I thought going into it was, let's say Everett, the world is underestimating him. At least he will have exactly, I'll have this on record, where, you know, listen, the founder gave us exactly why he thinks he can do this. And that'll be a magical document. If it turns out to be Theranos, and it's built on hot air or somewhere in between the two, which is what I think most people think. I don't think people think it's a fraud. I think people think it's not worth $17 billion. I would agree. I don't agree with companies going public before they have a product in market. And so things did not make a lot of sense. Like when I said, why are you doing a hydrogen and an electric, right? Like, why wouldn't you pick one? And he's like, well, you know, electric works in cities and hydrogen works there. Then he had a reason why Tesla's electric wouldn't work and his would. And, you know, then he was doing their pickup truck. And I said, well, kind of curious that you're doing a pickup truck. Like, I thought you have all these contracts with Anheuser-Busch and stuff like that. And then I asked him a little bit about those contracts. So, listen, the interview speaks for itself. I wasn't trying to trap him. And I'm never trying to trap anybody. I did have one moment where I laughed, where he, you know, I said, you know, did you name it Nikola because Elon chose Tesla? And he said, no, of course not. And I said, oh, that's, you know, kind of like, you know, like you're laughing, obviously.
I think that's the clip that went viral, by the way. I think that clip's like floating around the internet of you laughing when you asked that question.
Well, and then I said, you know, and he said, well, listen, I think Elon's a smart person. And I said, oh, do you give him credit for that? Yeah. And it just came out like as a quip. And that was literally the only quip I did during the podcast. I wasn't trying to make him foolish, but I did think that was a little bit silly to give Elon Musk credit for being smart. He's like, listen, I think he's a smart guy. And I was like, oh yeah, you give him credit for being smart.
So let me ask you this. Do you think he's oversharing? Because I see him around on every news network talking about Nikola. Do you think for him it benefits him to say more or to just kind of shut up and be quiet and just let the product do the speaking?
Okay, so I've seen this movie before. In the dot-com era, there were companies that went public before they had products. The majority of companies fail, right? The majority of startups fail. You know this more than anybody. The majority of startups in cars, like the overwhelming majority fail. So anybody starting a new company is coming at it with the odds of an overwhelming chance of failure. This includes Tesla, this includes DeLorean, this includes Fisker, and everybody in between. It is an overwhelming chance of failure. So the likely case here is he will fail, just like everybody else in a startup, and certainly like anybody else in a car startup. And so if you fail, having raised $1 billion and had whatever he peaked at, a $30, $40 billion valuation.
Higher than
at this
Ford,
moment in time.
By the way.
What's that?
That was a higher market cap than Ford.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff will make this look like a peak bubble moment. And that is the likely outcome. If you statistically did it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, you know, statistical majority chance of failure for any startup, including, and worse for cars. And then you do how much money did this company raise to become worth? This will be one of the biggest failures at the highest valuation in all likelihood, right? Like even Theranos, when you think about it, and then that will lead people to say it's a fraud, right? Mm-hmm. Now, fraud means you intentionally did it. So if he intentionally did this and he knows that he can't make the product, that would be fraud. I actually don't get the sense that that's the truth. I don't know that it's not the truth, but what I will say is the majority chance is failure, and it will leave a $1 billion, or if you bought the stock at the $30 billion mark, a $30 billion crater, right? Theoretically. Mm-hmm. Now that $30 billion, you know, nobody ever really owned that $30 billion. It was paper money, but some people did buy stock at that level. And so when this thing has the majority chance of failure and they do the postmortem on it, there'll be a giant crater of $30 billion in value. That'll be the headline for somebody who has never built a car company, who people will say he burned $30 billion, but, you know, he raised money at $30 billion. He sold shares at $30 billion. And that'll lead to a massive postmortem, and it'll be a peak bubble moment, I predict, ultimately. And my predictions tend to come true, so I'll probably be right in this case, but I don't give myself any credit for being right because, again, like that's like saying, well, 29 teams are going to not win. You know, that's like picking a random, you know, NBA team and saying they're not going to win the championship. Well, most of them don't, right? Like right. Only one yeah. in are the but 30 NBA teams.
A lot of those teams win. Do go to the playoffs. They do go to the conference finals.
Sure, and right.
I think Nikola, for all that's being said about them, if they have these contracts with Anheuser-Busch and Republic Services, which is like a garbage disposal company that they just mm-hmm. sold a bunch of trucks to, this company's probably going to make it to the playoffs, right?
You think they'll
unlike your Knicks. Sorry.
Yeah, we gotta. That's good. The Knicks not making it to the playoffs will make it all the more glorious when I get them there.
It'll give you a discount on the team when you try to exactly. buy them out.
No, but here's the thing. I will say this one final thing. We'll put it mm-hmm. to bed. Is you know, on those contracts, I tried to get him to talk a little bit about those contracts, and I don't know if anybody's seen those contracts. And I have seen in the past people sign letters of intent, and I did try to drill into him. Are these contracts? Are these memorandums of understanding? Are these letters of intent? Because when I invest in startups, people will tell me they have a customer. I'll say, great. And then when we do what's called due diligence, we need to see that contract. And so if people do think this is a fraud, which I don't know that it is or it isn't, a journalist getting their hands on the Anheuser-Busch contract, a journalist getting their hands on, you know, a cement truck company or something, a construction company, you said, garbage or truck company?
Garbage disposal, yeah.
We need to see those contracts. And are those contracts, those contracts are probably milestone-based, which means there might not be that much at risk for that other party. Now, if that other party puts $1 million down or $100 million down, then it's a real contract. But people sign contracts all the time that you can get out of, right? So then it's not yeah. really a binding contract. It's more of just a piece of paper that doesn't mean much. So I think the devil's in the details. If somebody were to find those contracts, or let's say they got leaked, I'm not encouraging anybody to leak them. I never would do that because you would get in a lot of trouble for leaking them. But if they were in the hands of a journalist right now, that would be and they were not tight, let's say, that could feel similar to Theranos, where they had the Walgreens. Remember, they had the Walgreens contract?
Yeah, they had the Walgreens agreement, right?
And so, you know, just because there's a contract doesn't mean there's a product, because there isn't a product here. Doesn't mean mm-hmm. there's a business. Doesn't mean it's enforceable. Doesn't mean it's money in the bank. So I'll just leave it at that.
And it's interesting because there is a group of Tesla supporters that were actually able to visit Nikola headquarters last week. And there was a lot of criticism from a lot of Tesla supporters because they were basically saying, I thought you guys were on our side, you know, because this group of Tesla supporters were basically trying to out Nikola as like this fraud group, or they, you know, they were visiting Nikola headquarters to try to find something.
Yeah, like the people were doing with the drones at, you know, Fremont and be like, look, there's a tent. They're building it in a tent.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. But I think it's kind of interesting how there's like this, like people have to kind of choose sides on social media, it seems like. And I'm actually going to be speaking to somebody who went on this field trip later this week, and we're probably going to take some of the extract of our conversation and put it up on the podcast feed.
You're going to do it anonymously, like without them revealing who they are, or they're
proud No. I'll tell you who it is. It's Homar's Catalog.
Great.
So he's actually a pretty prominent Tesla Twitter
personality. It's fantastic if there are citizen journalists and they report things accurately. Reporting on cars being in a garage, you know, on the way to being delivered, is when they were doing that with Tesla, was like, okay, you're saying that those cars have not been bought? That doesn't make any sense, because I know so many people, and you can just go on Twitter or Facebook and see people posting about their new Tesla. Like, the cars are obviously moving. They're on the roads. Like, you can't drive anywhere without seeing the Model, you know, 3 everywhere. They're obviously being delivered.
No, you make a good point. And now with these online forums, I mean, you can track that down pretty easily. There's even online forums where they create their manual, like, Google Doc spreadsheets of people putting in their VIN numbers, right?
Ah, right. So they know, here's the highest VIN number we found to date. Here's the number they say they've sold. And they're like, it doesn't reconcile. And it's like, okay, you people are crazy. But,
well, hey, let's take a quick break.
Take a break.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about micromobility in California. Stay tuned on Inside Transportation. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. I just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy, Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
And we're back on Inside Transportation. Johan Marino, Jason Calcanis, chopping it up on the hottest topics in
Placebo
transportation.
Placebo Joe.
Placebo Joe.
In the house.
It's my new, I'm going to see if that's a Twitter handle.
Placebo Joe.
No
antibodies.
So did you hear about this, Jason?
Oh, God.
The California State Assembly passed a bill.
What? Oh, no.
Believe it or not.
Brace for impact.
AB 12. 86.
I don't like the sounds of it. It's got an AB. I don't like the sounds of it.
But if it wasn't important, we wouldn't be talking about it on this podcast. So let me just say this. AB 1286 would impose new requirements for shared mobility companies that could possibly end shared scooters and bikes in the state.
You're kidding. Are you fucking me? Literally during a pandemic.
Let me tell you what this would do. Let me tell you what this would do, because you're just going to laugh even more when you hear what.
Stop.
All right. So producer Nick, before we started recording this podcast, was telling us about Four Locos, right?
Four Loko was a drink, a beverage.
Yes, it was a caffeinated malt liquor, right?
What could go wrong?
So I guess, you know, some kids died because they drank too many Four Locos and they banned Four Locos.
Correct.
And then they came back with a non-caffeinated version, right?
So then people have 5-hour energy plus.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, what's stopping people from, you know, drinking a Red Bull and then drinking a non-caffeinated Four Locos and dying? And he's like, well, then it would be the user's fault, right? So going back to this topic, this goes hand in hand with that. I promise.
Okay.
So
I'm going to give you, give you some leeway here. The judge will give you leeway, but you need to wrap this up. You have to bring it
home. Jason Calcanis, let's say you're riding a Lime scooter in beautiful San Francisco and you decide to do a wheelie, right? Because you just want to show off your skills and you hurt yourself. You break your neck.
Okay. 49-year-old man does a wheelie on a scooter. Okay. Breaks his elbow more likely. Okay.
Yes. Under AB 1286, Lime would be liable. I'm not joking. So the most striking of the provisions is that there's a requirement for all providers of shared bikes and scooters to assume liability for all damage and injury caused to riders on scooters or bikes,
oh my Lord,
even if it was no fault of their own. Wow. Keep in mind, these requirements would apply to shared mobility devices. So similar provisions for this don't exist for car rental services, which is another thing you rent and drive around, or even skydiving. You can skydive in California. Nothing happens to you, right? This would only affect micromobility companies, or this wouldn't just affect micromobility companies, but it'd also affect public bike share programs, right? So there's universities in California and different places that offer like bike sharing services, so that would also be affected. And it would also require shared mobility firms to carry a liability insurance policy of $1 million per each occurrence of bodily injury or property damage. This is about double the amount they are required.
I understand
to carry
the Four Loko metaphor now, yes.
Yeah, there you go. Full circle moment. So, Jason, what do you think this will do to scooter and bike sharing companies in California? Do you think this is even feasible?
California's legislature / politicians' greatest skill is snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Like, literally every time entrepreneurs, capitalists, innovators solve a problem for California, the legislature and the politicians from the Bay Area specifically just figure out a way to screw it up. There's a pandemic, people. There is gridlock. Cars are spewing carbon into the environment. We need more forms of transportation. If people are going to ride a bicycle or a scooter or walk down the street, they're going to assume some amount of liability. We cannot live in a world in which you are in a bubble. Nobody wants to live in that world. Also, nobody wants to live in a world where you're taxed to the most extreme point at which the entrepreneurs leave the state. So California has lost its mind. They are driving out entrepreneurs and investors and capital allocators and the middle class and everybody to states that have some basic notion of personal responsibility, personal independence, freedoms, and perhaps even some radical individualism and resiliency and self-reliance. And really, that's what California started as. That's why California became California. You had this radically self-reliant group of people, and now we're living in a nanny state where everything has to be mitigated for us. AB5 comes to mind as well. And a lot of this is virtue signaling, where people are just trying to pander on Twitter and social media and to their, what they think is their voting constituents. And the voting constituent that will be left in California, I predict, if this continues, are socialists who do not want to create companies, do not want to create jobs. They just want to get social services, and they want to be protected by the state. The idea that you would want the government to mitigate so much of your life that you couldn't assume the risk of riding a bicycle is so deranged.
This needs to stop. Like, I've had enough of the, like, you know, mobility services can serve as a lifeline for so many people who legitimately need them to commute. We've talked about this on this podcast, right? With public transportation being unsafe.
Of course.
Right,
and
now,
more transportation equals better transportation. Period. End of story.
Right. And this type of legislation also fails to address the most pressing concern with micromobility, which is safety. We need to do more to ensure safety, but not by creating
this
type
of
legislation
where
you have to carry insurance liabilities.
And Uber will, they've done it before. Right. Lyft and Uber just left Austin. Lyft and Uber, I mean, in Uber's case, they've got the entire world. California is a small part of the entire world. I mean, it's big, right? Don't get me wrong. It would be terrible for them to leave here. But if people don't want Uber, Lyft, Lime, and the other scooter companies, there's a whole bunch of places that do. And California is going to learn some really hard lessons, because if you squeeze people too hard, the more you squeeze, the more slips through your fingers. It's just basic concept of economics and governance. And
Do you think Prop 22 is going to pass in California, which is the AB5 repeal?
The problem with all these propositions
companies?
Is people don't know how to read them because they're specifically designed. Like, voting yes means, like, literally when we had the gay marriage one, people voted who wanted to vote for gay marriage incorrectly voted because they're worded so... They're worded like, you know, right. An aptitude test, like, you know, like taking the SATs or something where you have to like really slow down and think about it, where it should just be like gay marriage, yes or no. And so it's like independent contractor, yes or no. And there's 52 groups of when I read of independent contractors who are excluded, like musicians, you know, and real estate agents, like why are they having Uber and Lyft in their sites? Oh, because those companies became worth a lot of money. All that's going to happen if they do this is Uber wins hands down. Uber will have full-time shift employees. They'll pay them minimum wage or slightly above it. It'll be like a McDonald's job or working at Target. It'll be like any other, you know, shift slave, you know, lack of freedom job that sucks your soul.
Yeah, and
away.
I think they want to do like a franchise model. Like they
but
do
if the
in
cab
New York
companies
with the cabs,
are already franchises, is like, almost. Okay, so now we've just got two layers. By the way, that means the price is going to go up and the money, the whole thing that Uber did was it made it cheaper for everybody. So people who were poor or people who were lower middle class could also use these services, whereas they previously couldn't consider using it.
Absolutely,
so this is going to
yes.
result in all these politicians getting voted out of office. I mean, I don't know if you remember Vox, the publication, they stopped hiring. And I don't know the eventual outcome of this. They just stopped hiring freelancers in California. They're like, yeah, if you've, and all these freelancers
right.
are like, well, what just
that.
Happened?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, politicians decided that you can't decide to write an article for $200 for, you know, SB Nation about, you know, LeBron James. And I was like, what?
Yeah. It's just like crazy because if you think about it, right, the business models just aren't set up to accommodate $1 million insurance liability policy on each ride. Right. So if you really think about how like Bird or LimeWorks or even Uber and Lyft, I mean, like Harry from the rideshare guy was telling me a few weeks ago on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're Lyft, right, you're charging someone $15 for a ride.
25%.
Lyft keeps a percentage of that. The rest goes to the driver. Right. And where can you really cut? Like, where do you cut from?
You know what it used to be
to make up for this, right?
You know what
and ultimately, everyone pays more.
The cab companies would. You would cost you in New York City $130, $140, $150 on the weekends, like the busy times, to take the cab out for a 12-hour shift. If they were making $15 an hour, that meant the first 8 or 9 hours of driving went to the cab company. You literally rented the cab for that amount of time, and then you took the last 3 hours of the shift is when cab drivers made their money. That's why New York cab drivers drove like maniacs. They were like banging all over the road. They were knocking people over because they were on tilt from the beginning of the shift. And some of them told me, because I used to always talk to them about this because I like to talk to people. And they would say like, yeah, you know, like I don't make any money until maybe the 8th, 9th, 10th hour of the day. That's when I've paid them off. And you know who got all the money? The people who own medallions, because the medallions were the currency. So when Uber came out, they were heroes because they just removed that 30 or 40% tax. It used to wind up that 60% of the dollars, 50, 60, 70% of the dollars were going to the cab companies and medallion holders, and 30 cents on the dollar, 40 cents on the dollar, 50 cents on the dollar were going to the, whether it was the Lincoln Town Car, black cars, or the yellow cab. So congratulations to California for getting it wrong. And then the mom or dad who wanted to drop their kid off at soccer, do a couple of rides and come back and make enough money to pay for their soccer or pay for their vacation or pay down the debt or live in a house. They just lost that flexibility. And now they're going to have to drive 90 minutes to a Walmart somewhere or to a Starbucks, sit in traffic, leave their house at 6 a.m., not see their kids, you know, come home and put them to bed and not have zero flexibility. Congratulations, California.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that a lot of the low paid workers that are working at like a Walmart or a Target, what I've seen is that they're working second or third shifts as Uber Lyft drivers to just make more money.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And like, to me, that kind of bothers me because I know some of those people and it's like, you just want to take away their freedom from trying to make extra money to get stuff that they need. Right. It's not like the politicians are going to jump in and say, hey, we understand your situation. Here's an extra $500 a month. Right.
Yeah.
But the other thing that kind of bothered me about this was that there's a lot of pressing issues when it comes to scooters and bikes, but really when it comes to how we redesign streets, right? I don't see
why not spend your time
saying
we're going to put in a bike lane. Like, they're not focused on that.
Or a scooter lane, or a micro-mobility lane, like a dedicated micro-mobility lane, because you have to think about it, right? When you have scooters and electric bikes on the same road with pedestrians, with regular bikes, you're causing a safety issue, right? And no one's really addressed that. And it's even funny when you see the California Bicycle Coalition has opposed the legislation. I mean, I've never seen so many people on electric bikes walking on scooters during the pandemic. It's just kind of sad how they just want to wipe more players out of the game because it's just an absurd cost. It's not going to happen.
And when you think about, you know, politicians becoming so ineffective and so hated, it's because the way they're behaving is not in the interest of the people who voted them in. Mm-hmm. And so there are special lobbyists. And in the case of AB5, is that the one that the Uber one and the Lyft drivers?
Yes,
and the AB5. Freelance one, it's just about the unions. They're trying to unionize everybody. And those people don't want to be part of unions. Do they want to get health care? Do they want to get paid more money? Yes, we all want to get paid more money. Do we want sick days? Yes, they all do. There's a third way. I talked about it on this program before, the third way, which is, you know, when you hit 1,000 hours, you get X number of dollars in your flex spending, and you can spend it however you want.
Yeah, I think that's the Uber plan, right?
There has to be entry level.
Yeah.
What's that? That's the Uber plan. There have to be entry level jobs in America. There have to be jobs that are, let's face it, not great jobs. Do you ever have a not great job?
Oh yeah, I used to work at a yogurt shop. That was terrible.
Okay. I was.
But you have to start with those jobs, right? Like, that's just a part of being an American.
That's how you get started.
You have to start. Yeah. Like, I think it should be a national requirement to have every kid in America, age 16 and up, work at least one retail, hospitality, or restaurant job, because that builds character.
It's your 1 year
service. and that's something that I think our country's lacking right now, is just like empathy for others. Because I know, like, I'm sure this happened to you too, your first job. That's where you meet people, like, outside of your bubble, right? And you build so much character, make so many great, like, connections. So it's not just about that. It's just, like, building character, I think.
Yes. It's exactly what it's doing.
All right.
It's building character. I mean, it's so annoying. I mean, I have been a little vocal about this, but, you know, I don't know that I need to be in California for much longer.
You should follow Joe Rogan and set up shop.
I think if you look at the dysfunction of this place, like, I love California. I love. I love my time in Los Angeles. I love my time in the Bay Area. But, you know, maybe it's time for me to go to Nevada or Texas and just experience that, because it feels, I think for a lot of liberal people, it feels like liberal people and libertarians and personal freedoms, like, I think personal freedom is something that crosses across both parties. Mm-hmm. You know, on one side you have people who want the right to choose, and on another side you want people who want the right to own a gun. I think that's the streak of America. That is the common ground, that we would like our freedom. You want to teach your kids at home. You want to teach your kids at public school. You want to go to private school. You want to go to charter school. Whatever it is, you want to be able to make your own way in this world. We have this fierce independence. Sometimes it works against us, like masks and, you know, people not wanting to wear them. I get it. And that's the downside. But I do think it's not going anywhere. I think it's in our DNA that we want to be free.
Yes, yes.
We want to be free.
Well,
and personal freedom was the whole foundation of this country. And now there's certain places where they're like, you know what? You don't get to choose where you work. You don't get to choose how you work. You don't get to choose how you work for people. And what that's going to do is, I still own a significant amount of shares in Uber, and I'm holding them because I actually think if Uber loses, I'm using air quotes here, they win. If Uber is forced to make the people shift workers, and I don't want them to be shift workers, I want them to have flexibility, and I want them to just have, if they hit 1,000 hours or whatever it is, some number of dollars per hour put in an account for them. I want them to be treated fairly, and I don't mind paying a little more. I don't think anybody else minds paying a little more. But, you know, it's just, we've lost the script here. We've literally lost the script of like personal freedom in America and people being allowed to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. People want to pursue these jobs. Uber will wind up winning more because they'll be able to say, okay, you've got to have a Toyota Prius. And your car needs to have this freshener, air freshener in it, and you need to play this radio station. You need to put the Uber app on. You can no longer work for Lyft or Postmates. You have to sign a non-compete where you cannot compete and use other services. And your car has to be cleaned every day at this station. You have to show up for work at this location in the morning. This is where we're assigning you. And you work a four-hour shift, and we're going to have four-hour shifts. And we're going to tell you which four-hour shifts you get to work this week. And, your family and your time doesn't matter. And you need to wear an Uber shirt or a Lyft shirt, you know, with a logo on it. And, you know, like Disney doesn't allow facial hair or tattoos to be seen. Is that still the case?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, like literally Uber could say, you know what, you need to have like your hair in a bun. You need to have no tattoos showing. You need to have no facial hair. I mean, that's extreme, obviously. But you are able to control the work. And I remember the early days of Uber when I got pitched it as an investor. And I don't know, I think I was like the third or fourth investor in Uber. I can't remember. Anyway, putting that aside, when I said, hey, you know, we should have a thing, I literally said to some executive at some Uber, you know, cocktail party, mm-hmm. you know, like, why don't we have like a place where you can drive, the drivers can come and get their cars cleaned and get a cup of coffee. And then why don't we give them Uber shirts so they're easy to identify, that'd be better for security. And why don't we have an Uber radio station that plays with the app and we'll play a certain amount of songs and we could have a business development deal and have the advertisers said, no. We cannot direct how they provide the service. We can give them the job, they can take it or not. We cannot tell them what to wear because then they would be employees. And I was like, oh, that's a bummer. I really would love to have more consistency because when people complained about Uber in the early days, you know what the complaints were?
What?
The variability of the service.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is you're making a really good point. Right now during the pandemic, Uber's ride business is actually profitable. Because they're not subsidizing any of the rides. The traffic has gone down by a lot. And they've actually been able to make some money during the pandemic on that like ride-hailing business. We're not talking about Uber Eats or anything else. Just ride-hailing right now is making money.
Of course. So. And you know what? It's just we're going to be sitting here, I predict, in 2 years. A large number of the creators and the capital allocators will have left California. And Uber will have them potentially as employees or not. And I think a lot of the great jobs will be in Florida, Texas, Seattle, Nevada, you know, Southwest, anywhere where people have reasonable ideas about taxation and freedom. And I think libertarians and liberals are going to move to conservative states and start taking them over. So a lot of the red states are going to turn purple and then eventually blue. I think that's actually what's going to happen.
Yeah. Cool.
And this is going to really be weird. It's going to get really weird. I think that's one prediction I have. 2020 has been the weirdest year of our lives, and it's about to get more weird.
Oh, man. I'm not ready for it. But one thing we will do is we will move
on
from
this topic. You just
shot
yourself with a vaccine. You literally just took a death vaccine.
I just paid $2,000 to take a death vaccine. Yes.
I took a death vaccine. I love it.
But you know what Nick, our producer, calls a death vaccine? A Four Loko. Anyway.
It's a Four Loko.
It's a Four Loko.
They literally should brand it a Four Loko. I just want to tell you the Four Loko thing. The reason why Four Loko did the right thing is a young person who's drinking assumes a can of, you know, one unit of alcohol and caffeine is designed to have a certain profile. And they specifically made the profile. I think it was four times the caffeine. We'll look it up during the break or put it in the show notes. But like, I think that was, there was something called Jolt as well. And Jolt was supposed to be two times the caffeine. Yeah. And what happened was people who would normally drink three sodas did six. And there's basically caffeine toxicity. So you do have to have a certain reasonableness when you're producing a product in the world. You should have the personal freedom. But if you're going to produce a product that confuses the public, like if you made a car that just had massively, you know, different steering, brakes, or speed profiles, you'd want to educate people a little bit, like, hey, this thing's got anti-lock brakes, they're better, or this thing doesn't, or this thing has traction control, or this thing doesn't. So there's a little education that needs to occur. That's a separate issue than personal freedom, just to be clear. Education, disclaimers, great. That's what they should be doing with the Lime scooter. When you get the Lime scooter, it should say, this thing is really fucking dangerous if you go this fast, if you drive on these streets. Are you sure you want to do it? Because by the way, if you, I don't know, have you bungee jumped?
I haven't, have you?
No. Why would I do that? It's stupid. But for the stupid people who bungee jump.
Maybe there's an adventurous part of you that's like, hey, I want to bungee jump.
Not jumping with rubber bands off of bridges, sorry. But anyway, for those maniacs, they sign a lot of waivers. And nobody's looking at those maniacs and saying they shouldn't be allowed to do it. But then we go to the person on a street corner who's going to get on a scooter and we're like, by the way, you're too dumb to understand how a bicycle and a scooter works, even though you've used them your whole lives. Give me a break.
Right. Well, one thing I will say is that Revel, which I'm sure you've heard of, they had a few accidents.
Maybe we talk after
New
the
York
jump
City.
About that one.
Yeah, we might have to. But one thing I was going to say real quick is that they actually are starting to require their users to take like a 20-minute quiz before they start riding
on
one of their mopeds.
That's what I just said. Education. Yeah. Disclaimers. Perfect.
Right.
Perfect.
And a helmet selfie. They're making everyone take a helmet selfie before they ride, and their AI can detect that there's a helmet.
Perfect. And now, now what if the person takes it off and they smash their head into the concrete? Not their fault. Not Revel's fault. That's called Darwin.
Well, in California.
Mm. Yeah, no, California's going to be like, if somebody decides to bungee cord jump, imagine if California said, if somebody decides to bungee cord jump, you need to assume the liability as the bungee cord provider. Or, by the way, San Francisco owns the Golden Gate Bridge. If people jump off of it, it's San Francisco's fault. It's like, no, the person jumped off the bridge. Like, nowhere in the world do we take this. Is patriarchal the right word for it? Like, where, like, you can't do anything? This, like...
Yeah, I think that would be the right
word,
like,
crazy
yeah.
patriarchal, like, oh, you're too dumb to make your own decisions in life. Like, young people, yes. If you're under 21 and your frontal lobes are still developing, we get that. But for adults, you want a bungee cord? Like, Alex Honnold is literally climbing up the side of Half Dome or whatever it is without a rope. Uh-huh. And we're putting him on 60 Minutes and making movies about it. And he's a hero.
Yeah.
And North Face gave him a contract. And I said, listen, I don't know if North Face is doing the right thing here, because I'm happy he got the money, but I think we're incenting people to do crazy stuff to get a contract. But putting that aside, if he wants to climb up the mountain, as long as there's nobody behind him for him to fall on, okay, we seem okay with it. So at the same time, California lets him free solo Half Dome. We want to make Lime not be, and people can't decide to work for Uber part-time. Okay, got it. Thanks.
Well, I have an update for us. The original Four Loko had about 160 milligrams of caffeine, which is the same as an 8-ounce cup of coffee, twice as much as a can of Red Bull.
Coors Light
sponsors Twist?
Are you saying that's 12 cups of coffee in one can?
No. That's like twice as much as a can of Let me explain this again. So a 8-ounce cup of coffee has 160 milligrams of caffeine. That's the same as two Red Bulls.
A coffee is two Red Bulls? Okay.
If that makes sense.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Apparently. Coffee's stronger than Red Bull. Okay.
Yeah.
Did not know. I assume the opposite. Okay.
Yeah. I think we should try to get a sponsorship deal with Four Lokos, just like you did with Coors Light and Twist.
I love a crisp Coors Light. What time is it? I may have to crack. I may need to close my Dell laptop and shut down Zendesk and stop doing clearing these tickets and crack open a cold Coors Light. Because,
hey, I mean, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to add a little can opening sound effect. anyway, well, we're still doing a podcast.
Pick me up in your Ford Mustang after this.
We're gonna go to break real quick, and then we're just gonna wrap up the podcast with our two last topics.
We'll wrap,
and we'll be back right after the break.
Hey, everybody! Let me take a moment to thank Fenwick and West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation, where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back here on Inside Transportation. Jason, have you heard of Neo, the car company?
No, I've heard of Neo from The Matrix and Neo, a cryptocurrency.
Well, you're in for a treat. So Neo is a luxury EV maker in China. They're Tesla's biggest competitor in China.
They said they're
going to expand to Europe. Yes, they're going to expand to Europe in 2021. Hmm. So at the moment, the company only sells cars in China, but they said they're going to expand into Europe in 2021, where they're going to be able to leverage a market that's beginning to embrace EVs. European countries are starting to offer more generous EV incentives, and they're starting to map out EV mandates that are going to happen over the next decade. But they're also rolling out a really interesting component to how their customers can purchase their vehicles. So they're actually going to allow their customers to lease their preferred battery in what NIO is calling a battery as a service program. So let's say, Jason, right now you can buy a NIO car with a battery pack for about $50,000. What they're trying to do is say, hey, instead of paying $50,000 for the car, just pay us $40,000. And you can pay $150 a month for the standard battery. Or if you want the more advanced battery, you can pay $250, right? Or if you have the standard battery and then maybe a few months later you want to upgrade, you can do that.
Too complicated.
So they're starting to do this to try to get, I'm assuming just to try to get some monthly recurring revenue just from battery sales. But analysts expect the move to lower the barrier to EV ownership. What do you think, Jason?
Stupid and too complicated.
This is the future of car buying.
They call this like a bridge technology in my business. Like, it's obvious that the batteries are getting cheaper every year. The density is getting greater. So this is a gimmick / bridge technology. Simplicity is what works best. Remember, there used to be like a very low battery for the Model S, like 150 miles or something.
Yeah, it was like the 60. I think it was the Model S.
Yeah, and they were
Model
just
S
at
60.
Some point Elon was like, enough. You know, like it's just I don't want people driving around with this battery, then complaining that it runs out of battery. And the batteries were so cheap anyway that it was just like 200. What's the smallest battery you can buy on a Model 3 right now? 250 or something? Like
yeah, it's like 250.
It's too complicated. And remember Tesla had the battery swap and they showed it.
They did, yeah.
And I was at the event actually with Elon and I saw them do it and it literally changed the battery in like 60 seconds. It's not that difficult. It's just like you just remove a bunch of bolts. But do you want your car having the bolts and the batteries removed and put back on? It's a waste of human energy. The amount of time
I know NIO's also doing that in China as well. They're doing like a battery swap program.
I'm looking at the website right now, which is nio.com. And the cars look ugly, number one. I'm looking at the EC6. That's a nope.
Well, let me say this real quick. On August 23rd, 2019, which was a year ago, you could buy a share of NIO for $2.92.
And now it's
today, shares closed at $14.97. So you would have like 7x.
I will say the cockpit looks okay. It's a little overcomplicated, like a lot of Chinese products. You know, like Japanese products, like German products, Japanese products, Chinese products. They all have like a kind of different aesthetic. And I'm looking at the intelligent digital cockpit, which looks a little.
I do really like that feature because the car actually comes with an AI where if let's say almost like an Alexa, you can tell the car, hey, lower down the temperature to 65 degrees. Yeah. Right. And it'll do it. I think that's the one killer feature.
Tesla has
of
that.
This car.
It doesn't work great. So I've stopped using it, but I hear it's getting better. Like you can be like, hey, Tesla, take a. Mm. You actually press the button on the steering wheel, which is better because then it doesn't automatically go on. So I kind of like that better. I've used it for the navigation quite successfully where I've said, like, hey, Tesla, you know, go to In-N-Out Burger. And that's literally worked. And it's like, hey, routing it In-N-Out Burger. So that kind of stuff's going to work. But this is dumb. Like the bat, you don't want to, in consumer products, you don't want to make things complicated. You want to make them simple. And anytime anybody does anything complicated, it never works. And that's the bottom line. And this is too complicated.
You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of when telecom companies started saying, hey, we're not going to lock you into contracts anymore, right? And then instead they lock you into like a 24-month zero interest APR financing agreement for the phone. You're still locked in, right? So yeah, it's interesting what they're doing in other markets. I think EV is going to be a huge market for them. Tesla's building a facility there. Jaguar actually just said a few days ago, there's indications that they're going to be an EV only brand in the future, which is going to be super interesting. We have more of that in, well, I was going to say today's Inside Electric Vehicles newsletter, but this is coming out on Thursday. So read Monday's edition of Inside Electric Vehicles.
If you go to inside.com/whatever the topic of the thing is, so it's inside.com/transportation or inside.com/EV, we now list the previous episodes there. Boom.
Boom.
Okay.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
All right, wrapping up. Here we go.
Dope or nope. Our favorite feature of the week. Now, I can't talk too much trash on this next company that we're going to be highlighting because they might be interested in joining us.
What do you mean
joining
us as a sponsor? Their CEO. Wouldn't stop me from trashing.
No.
Oh, you mean coming on the podcast? Oh, okay. You want to be judicious in the criticism of people you're trying to get on your podcast. Be fair.
Yes, I haven't gotten the confirmation yet, but the CEO is interested.
So we will be extra fair.
So Candy, yes, we're going to be fair. I'm always fair, but Kandi is actually a big auto company in China, and they're starting to expand in the U.S. They had actually already been here making ATVs, so they're expanding their ATV business to distribute these electric vehicles that they're already selling in China.
Hold on 1 second. My kid's banging on the door. I got to stop this for a second. Hold on. I'm right back.
All right.
I'm going to be done in 20 minutes, and I'll come out. I'll come out in 20 minutes. We'll watch a movie at 5 o'clock, 4:30 now. Okay, I'll be right out. You gotta let me finish my work, okay? Don't bang on the door again. I'll be done in 20 minutes. Go into the kitchen, okay, please? What? Okay, I'm coming soon. Okay, don't bang on the door. I'm on the phone. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Laura.
Okay, I'm back. Let's just start from the hotter. I don't know if this got picked up on the thing. Nick. But that was just Johanna's like, bang. Are we going to finish Jurassic World? Are we going to finish? Or leave it in. I don't know. Leave it in if it's funny.
All right, we'll restart it.
Like if your kid bangs on the door, they bang on the door.
Yeah,
you should leave it in.
People are used
then,
to it. People
okay,
are
let's
used
just go from
it.
Where you said, leave it in. It's funny. Okay, so this is... Kandi.
I was talking about like
Kandi.
So Kandi's coming out with the KANDI. Okay.
This is a Chinese company?
They were distributing ATVs.
Okay.
Yes, it's a Chinese automaker. They were already in the United States distributing ATVs.
Oh, yeah,
ATVs.
Those
so they were
cool.
making
those
ATVs
cool.
and distributing them out of Texas. But they're starting to distribute these mini electric cars that they're already selling in China. One of them is called the K27, and it's a mini car. It's priced at $17,499, but you can qualify for a $7,500 rebate from the government as a tax incentive. Or if you're in California, for example, you should qualify for an extra $2,000. So most people are going to be paying under $10,000
Amazing.
For these cars. The car has a top speed of 63 miles per hour.
This is a literal city car.
It's a drawback.
This is a tooling around car. You know what I like about this car?
Yes, it's a.
This car is perfect to give to your teenager. It is a feature that it's 63 miles an hour and 100 mile range because they cannot leave the area. This is the perfect starter car or for a planned community or a college campus, whatnot. And the price.
It even has
I'm looking
Bluetooth.
At the. It looks like
Bluetooth.
A normal car.
That's all you need.
I'm looking at it now. It doesn't look like a golf cart, it looks like a car.
Right.
It's unique looking. What would you say this? It looks like something from like, I'll be totally honest, like the original Judge Dredd movie or something. Like it's got some really wicked angles. So it does look, it looks like a sci-fi version of a car from the like in the 90s, this is what they thought a car would look like in the year 2020. So it's probably accurate in that way with the lines. But is it minivanish or is it just small car? I can't tell the scale of it because nobody's standing next to it. It's a small car.
It's a small car. So it looks like a minivan.
The K27.
And we have those in the show notes on Notion, okay. So you can check those out. The K27. But how about that next one? So there's the
K23. You know what it looks like? K27 looks like a Mini Cooper.
Yes, yes.
That's what it looks like, right? It's got a little bit retro, mm-hmm. and it comes in funky yellow, blue, red colors.
I mean, to me, it looks To me, it kind of reminds me of like
even more
Honda
like
Fit.
A Honda Fit. That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. But this was actually supposed to be like a crossover. So it's bigger than the K27.
Wait, the K23 or the K27?
Oh, the K23.
Oh, yeah. So the K23 is the bigger the funky looking
variant
one I'm looking at.
Yeah.
What does that one go for, I wonder?
Yeah, yeah. So that one starts at 27,499, so about 28,000. But you also get, you get about 20K. So this one has a top speed of 70 miles per hour and a range of 188 miles.
I'm sorry.
So
they're both dope. I'm not saying that to get the guy on the, the gal on the podcast, whoever making this. But it is dope because you need to have some very low-end models. And I would love to see Tesla make something like this, what I would refer to as a city car or a European car. This is not a Texas car. Mm-hmm. This is a Brooklyn car. This is a car. This is a hack. Like, remember the smart car? Like the
Yes, I do.
It was Mercedes-Benz smartwatch.
I think that was Mercedes-Benz, right?
Was Mercedes or BMW? I think it was Mercedes plus smartwatches. Anyway, the smart car, the two, you could park it into a parking spot, angling it in, and it was so lacked such depth that it would be like the width of like a, you know, like your Escalade.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Exactly.
You could get out of parallel parking that way. I remember wanting that car. I remember wanting that car as a kid because I was like, I never want to learn how to parallel park. And to this day, I'm still
in
really
Brooklyn,
terrible.
People would buy these because they would have garages and driveways that were, you know, call it a car and a half in length, and you could put these back to back. So I think all what I've learned in my career,
I see.
More options equals better. More options for transportation, more options for housing. All housing helps housing. All transportation options helps transportation. So if you get more people using scooters, bikes, or city cars, then the highways do better, the environment does better, and it gives a range of people in society more options. Right now, let's face it, you have to make, you know, whatever it is, your household income's got to be like double the cost of your car or the cost of your car because you're paying for it over 5 or 10 years, something like that. I don't know what the actual formula is. There's some formula that somebody, a listener will tell us is the optimal percentage of your household income. Like people say rent should be a third, your car maybe should be a fourth or something. This feels like this could be that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's dope.
I think so. And like you were saying, so this would be the K27 after the tax incentives would be the cheapest new car you can buy in the US. So that title was previously held by the Nissan Versa. But what I think is impressive about this is just the cost savings. And like you were saying, not everyone's going to be able to afford a Tesla, even the low priced ones, right? So it's going to be interesting to see people shift from like a gas powered Nissan Versa or a used car into an EV. That's progress, right? I think that's progress for green energy. So I give it a dope. Jason, you give it a dope as well.
Do we have
right?
some rating above dope? I'm just going to say very dope. I'm just going to go very dope. I think it's very dope.
Super dope?
It's not plaid mode. It's just very dope. I'll tell you why it's very dope. It's very dope because more people should be able to afford these. Your teenager should not be driving over 65 or 75 miles an hour. That's a feature. And 100-mile battery range is lame for half the country and perfect for the other half. And so this is much smarter. This car seems much smarter than the one we were talking about before where you swap the batteries out and you're buying the battery. That's too complicated. This is simple. And when consumers make decisions, they just want simplicity. And like there's two models here. One is 10, one is 20. One goes 65, one goes 75, one goes 100 miles. One goes, what did you say, 160 or something? Like, it's like super easy. Super easy to make a decision.
166.
I mean, yeah. it's less than your Metro card. It's less than you're spending
like
on
20 bucks
you know,
a month.
The bus. This seems cheaper than the bus. They should just put like, you know, can you imagine for an Uber driver or something? If they had a high speed charging network, the Uber driver, or Lyft driver, these could be sitting. If Uber wound up having full time drivers, the drivers would show up for work. There would be a fleet of 100 of these charging. And you would just grab one and go. And then you would, after whatever, if you're going, you know, 40 miles an hour on average, in 2 hours, 3 hours, you would plug it in, take another one out. And that's how shift work would work for Uber. You wouldn't bring your own car. And then people would have cars at home collecting dust, right? They would just be forced to use this. And so that's why the magic of ride sharing was the car's already paid for.
Wow. Well,
it's people already have cars. See, that's another thing these stupid politicians don't understand. Yeah. They're so dumb. The whole idea originally with Zim rides and Lyft, and you got to give them credit for this, was, the car exists already and it's used 5% of the time. What if it was used 20% of the time? That incremental use would only cost 20, 30 cents a mile. I know that the tax is 57 cents, but realistically on a five-year-old Prius, what is the incremental cost per mile? It's not 57 cents. It's like something ridiculous, 25 cents a mile. So
right, like
really, that was the arbitrage people were doing. They were taking their old Prius or buying a used Prius for 10K, and they were putting another 50, 100,000 miles on it, and it was costing them 25 cents a mile, and they cleaned it themselves, and they used it on the weekend to go drive around because they're sitting in the driver's seat. Who cares? It's in the back seat.
Right. Well, we will wrap things up on today's issue.
Thank you for your service.
Inside Transportation. We're going to have a lot more fun interviews with founders and stuff like that, like we did last week with the CEO and founder of Geo Orbital. He joined us and he told us about his journey developing. I don't know if you listened to the podcast last week, but he actually developed this wheel that you can retrofit any bike to become like an electric bike. And it was
I did hear about that.
Yeah, it was like on Shark Tank and stuff like that. So we actually spoke with him last week. We're speaking with a lot more founders and CEOs. So this week,
we want to mix
feed,
it up here because
So this
if somebody
week in our
wants
feed,
to
there
pitch
should be
somebody,
an interview.
If you have an idea for somebody, just reply to the @inside handle on Twitter, or just email johan@inside. Right, your
johan@inside.com. But
not PR people, unless you're like a PR person for something legit. Like we don't send us something dumb. Like we're like a refinancing car company, and like you're trying to get something out of reaching the audience. Like if you're building something dope, be on the podcast. And if you're building something nope, don't be on the podcast.
Or go on a competing podcast, a competing transportation.
Is there
podcast.
One?
I don't know. We might be the only transportation podcast out there. Yeah, there we go.
We're still number one.
Well, thanks all for joining us today. We will see you next week. Take care.